Family of the Most Holy Theotokos, the family of Zechariah and Elizabeth, the parents of John, Simeon the God receiver, Anna the prophetess, who recognized Christ in his infancy. Saint Luke records that Anna was announcing to all those who were coming to the temple, all those who were correctly expecting the Messiah. That is, Anna was saying to them, the Messiah has come. The Messiah is here, but only to those who had the true knowledge and perception about the coming of the Messiah. Therefore, knowledge about the coming Messiah was not imperative to be given by John the Baptist. However, for the multitude, for the crowds, this was imperative. For the genuine believers, however, the Messiah had come. As you see, the two prophets will be pointing out the Antichrist. However, those who will be true and genuine Christians and will be anticipating the second coming of Christ correctly, they will not have to wait for the two prophets to learn the truth. They will figure out the truth all by themselves. So what is the purpose of this seal, of the seal? To aid the faithful in this recognition, to recognize that this man is the Antichrist. Now you may ask, is this going to be so terribly difficult? My friends, yes, yes, yes. But to see how these things are and how God seals mystically, I will discuss in a few words the seal which takes place in the vision of Ezekiel, being that this is considered to be a great typology. And we need to note that this seal and every seal aims to complete something or to carry out something or to have people warned about something. For example, when the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist is about to be completed, the priest seals the Holy Chalice, as we read in the priest's service books. The priest seals the Holy Chalice by the sign of the cross. Pay attention, we the priests, using our hand, bless the cup with the sign of the cross. This is called sphragisis, or a seal. In this manner, we also place the seal of the cross on the head of a person. We seal with the seal of the Holy Cross. Now, let's listen for all these things in the vision of Ezekiel in the 8th and 9th chapter. I will highly recommend for you to please read these two chapters when you go home. You will be amazed. You will be truly amazed. Ezekiel 8 and 9 chapters. There, the prophet narrates that while at his home and discussing some subjects with the elders of Israel, he went into ecstasy. He was overcome by a vision, and this far away from Jerusalem. They were in Babylon. He was pulled by the hair, and the elders did not perceive anything other than the fact that the prophet went into some ecstasy. He was not carried bodily to Jerusalem, but in the spirit. However, he felt that he was carried away in body and spirit, but the elders who were in his presence do not lose sight of him. He does not speak to them because he is in a state of ecstasy. God takes him and brings him to the temple of Solomon and places him in a specific spot of the temple, and there he sees in the first phase of the vision the lawlessness and the sins of the people of Israel. The people of Israel are worshiping an idol of Hermes. God now takes him from there and places him at another point of the temple. There's a certain room, and God tells him, dig, and he dug. And all this is in the spirit, in a vision. And after this, after he dug the hole in this certain wall, God instructs him to enter inside this hole in a sort of a basement, a room. And God tells him to enter therein, to see what these people are doing, what evils they are doing. And the prophet says, and I enter therein, and he said to me, go in and see the wicked abominations which they are doing there. So I went in and saw, and there every sort of creeping thing, abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed all around on the walls. And there stood before them 70 men of the elders of the house of Israel, and in their midst stood Jazaniah, the son of Shaphan. Each man had a censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Does this not remind you the Masonic temple with all the different Masonic symbols and paraphernalia? Most of you saw these things in the pictures that were publicized in the newspapers lately, but we also know these things from a number of books in circulation about Freemasonry. They display many pictures inside of the Masonic Lodge. And what we have in the far side of the room is their altar, the icon of the sun, the icon of the moon, the Masonic triangle, the protractor, the square, all these symbols. This temple, and that's exactly what the lodge is, it is a temple. It is. It stays locked. No one can enter. Those passing by, the neighbors, are clueless. They have no idea what goes on inside. So here in this vision, God opens a hole on the wall and says, go inside to see what takes place. Take a look inside. Doesn't this description remind you of the Masonic temple, the Masonic lodge, where these people have a lot of these elements, incense and worship. They even have worshipful masters. They worship the great architect of the universe, the sun. And this is precisely why they have the icons of the sun and the moon at the right and the left of the altar. During the two equinoxes of the year, they hold a celebration, a festival to honor the sun. And since we have a lot of Masonic lodges and a lot of Masons in our parish councils, let's listen to what will happen next, exactly what happens to those in Jerusalem. And now Ezekiel enters the third phase of his vision, and God shows him another image. God takes the prophet to another point of the temple, and behold, there women were sitting and mourning, weeping on behalf of Tammuz, or Adonis, a deity that dies and resurrects. And this is nature, the worship of nature that dies in the winter and resurrects in the spring. So this worship of nature, the God behind this death and resurrection of nature, takes the name of Adonis or Tammuz, and that's the local name of Adonis in that area. So the women are bereaving, they are weeping on account of the death of Tammuz. So even women are delving into idolatry, especially women, especially. Fourth image, at another place of the temple, as many as 20 men outside of the temple between the altar and the gates of the temple are doing something else. And let's read. There I saw as many as 20 men having their backsides towards the temple of the Lord and their faces on the opposite side, and they were worshiping the sun. The temple of Solomon was built with the altar facing west and not east, as our churches face today. Today's Orthodox Christian churches have their entrance door at the west wall, and the Ieron, the altar, is in the east wall. The priest faces eastward. However, the Temple of Solomon was built in the opposite way compared to today's Byzantine Orthodox churches. The altar, or the main temple, was facing west. So these 20-some elders turned their backsides to the temple of God, and they were facing the sun, which sun they worshiped. Did you see this? They were worshiping the sun. Do they remind you of the Masons who worship the great architect of the universe, the sun? What will take place next? Wait and you will see. Son of man, did you see the abominations of my people? Did you see them? Some out in the open and some behind closed doors. Now the prophet sees six men with axes in their hands, and they are commanded to go out and slay all the inhabitants of the city because of these abominations. However, before the slaying takes place, a seventh man appears dressed in a long garment, reaching his feet, a special attire with a special belt. If you will, this seventh man is God the Word, who would incarnate in the aftermath. He is given a commandment, apparently from God the Father, and this seventh man received this order, and he does not have a slaughter weapon in his hand like the other six. And the voice tells him, go through Jerusalem, go through the midst of the city, and set the mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that are done in the midst thereof. And set the mark upon the foreheads of all those people who witness these abominations, the idolatries, the Masonic activities, the immoralities, the filth, and whatever else they see. They are not able to do anything about it. They are helpless. They can only do one thing, sigh, cry, pray, and they feel pain. They feel great pain. They are lamenting. They feel the pain for the awful state of God's people in Jerusalem, for all the abominations that take place inside the city. But again, they're helpless. So do not touch these men who are marked, who are sealed on their foreheads. And here I remind you of another seal in Exodus where Moses instructed the Israelites to kill an unblemished lamb and seal the lintel and the side posts of the door so the destroyer angel would pass over these sealed homes. There we have a seal, a special mark, and the Egyptians are devastated by the deaths of the firstborn, but the Hebrews are spared because they were sealed. You may want to study this in the first chapters of the book of Exodus. So you will spare all those who bear the mark on their foreheads. And to the others, about the others, go through the city and smite without pity, smite and slay young, old maids and little children and women, and begin from my holy ones, from my sanctuary, from the temple. Begin the slaughter from the archpriest, the priests, the elders. Begin your execution at the temple. I mentioned this many times, privately maybe, not publicly. When God's revenge and judgment falls upon our people, it will begin from us, the priests. And I'm not speaking irresponsibly. God tells us this here. Start the execution of my holy ones first. Yes, we the priests will pay first, because we have betrayed God. We were first to betray God, and our people followed us in our betrayal and apostasy. This is the truth, my friends. And now you may ask, what is this mark? The original Hebrew text uses the word T, the 22nd letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which coincides with the letter T of the Phoenician alphabet. If you would open your encyclopedia and look up the letter T or the word alphabet, you will see the Hebrew and the Phoenician alphabet. And the letter T of the Phoenician alphabet is much like our lowercase English letter T. This is pretty standard in the Latin, French, and English languages. The letter T is a cross. And from this, we gather that the seventh man who was to set the mark upon people's foreheads, he was actually placing the cross, he was sealing these people with the sign of the cross. In previous lessons, I have told you that the uncreated energy of the precious cross was fully and always active in the Old Testament. And here in Ezekiel, the faithful are being sealed by the sign of the cross. Now, how can someone deny the seal of the precious cross? This is done by two methods. Theoretically, by not believing in Christ, and in praxis, by denying the power of the cross of Christ. As the Apostle Paul tells the Philippians, those Christians whose God is the belly, these are the enemies of the cross of Christ. In other words, they are baptized Christians. They are not denying the cross in theory. They venerate it. They go to church. But they have denied the cross of Christ in their lifestyle. They have denied the crucifixional gospel of Christ by being the people of hedonism and constant entertainment. The cross opposes this lifestyle. The cross is the symbol of self-control, the symbol of discomfort and suffering. This is what the cross stands for. And St. Paul labels the pleasure-seeking Christians enemies of the cross of Christ. So this is quite obvious. If someone has denied the cross, either in theory or in praxis, does not have the seal of God, and he's subject to destruction. My friends, we need to search and question ourselves. Each one must ask this question. Do I have the seal of God? Do I have the information that I still maintain the seal of God, the one that we received during our baptism and chrismation? Do I still have it? Do I maintain it? Am I a faithful person? Do I live according to the law of God so I can maintain the seal of Christ indelible in my life? This is a great subject, a subject that concerns the Christians of all ages, and especially during the time of the arrival of the Antichrist. But even now, let's not say that these things are only for the future, but for the present as well. As we explain, this seal takes place many, many times in history, many times. And if you will, tomorrow we can have a catastrophic event. Tomorrow the sirens can sound and we can wake up to a great catastrophe. Who will be saved? Only those who have the seal of the cross on their foreheads. How will they be saved? It is quite possible that even their life will be spared, but that's not the issue. But in such a catastrophe where people will turn against God, then these people bearing the seal of the cross will not fall. They will stay standing. They will not be stricken by fear. They will remain people of faith, regardless to what concentration camp they may be led to, regardless to what crematoriums they may be shoved in, hot ovens, regardless of what tortures they undergo, they will remain standing. As you can see, my friends, we are always in great need of this seal. We must always have this seal, and we must question ourselves, do we have the seal of Christ? Do we maintain it? My friends, what else can I say? Our time's almost up. And next week, we will see the number of those sealed, and that number is 144,000 according to the book of the Revelation. Here, in these verses, we will see who are these 144,000. Who do they represent? And are we included in this number? But because this subject is quite involved, we will continue this topic next time, God willing. And in a few minutes remaining on the tape, we will read the chapters of Ezekiel 8 and 9 of the great prophet Ezekiel, who was taken into captivity very young, about 25 years old. He was married at the time, and he went to Babylon. He was captured by Nebuchadnezzar, and they stayed for about 70 years in captivity. And he was called to the task of being a prophet in a very powerful way. God appeared to him and told him that tonight, when your wife dies, again, he's about 30 years old, when your wife dies, I don't want you to weep, do not cry, do not show much emotion, and do not accept any condolences from your countrymen, from the other people. And everyone was amazed at the great perseverance and the great patience and self-control that this great prophet showed at losing his wife at the age of 30 years old. And after that, he, of course, dedicated himself to the work of God. And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I sat in my house with the elders of Judah sitting before me, that the hand of the Lord God fell upon me there. Then I looked, and there was a likeness like the appearance of fire, from the appearance of his waist and downward fire, and from his waist and upward like the appearance of brightness, like the color of amber. He stretched out the form of a hand and took me by a lock of my hair, and the Spirit lifted me up between earth and heaven and brought me in visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the north gate of the inner court, where the seat of the image of jealousy was, which provokes to jealousy. And behold, the glory of God of Israel was there, like the vision that I saw in the plain. Then he said to me, Son of man, lift your eyes now toward the north. So I lifted my eyes toward the north, and there, north of the altar gate, was this image of jealousy in the entrance. Furthermore, he said to me, Son of man, do you see what they are doing, the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here to make me go far away from my sanctuary? Now turn again, you will see greater abominations. So he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, there was a hole in the wall. Then he said to me, Son of man, dig into the wall. And when I dug into the wall, there was a door. And he said to me, Go in and see the wicked abominations which they are doing there. So I went in and saw, and there every sort of creeping thing, abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed all around on the walls. And there stood before them 70 men of the elders of the house of Israel, and in their midst stood Jezaniah, the son of Shaphan. Each man had a censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then he said to me, Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the room of his idols? For they say, The Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. And he said to me, Turn again, and you will see greater abominations that they are doing. So he brought me to the door of the north gate of the Lord's house. And to my dismay, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. Then he said to me, Have you seen this, O son of man? Turn again, you will see greater abominations than these. So he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house. And there at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. And they were worshiping the sun toward the east. And he said to me, Have you seen this, O son of man? Is it a trivial thing to the house of Judah to commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence. Then they have returned to provoke me to anger. Indeed, they put the branch to their nose. Therefore, I will also act in fury. My eye will not spare, nor will I have any pity. And though they cry in my ears with a loud voice, I will not hear them. Then he called out in my hearing with a loud voice, saying, Let those who have charge over the city draw near, with each with a deadly weapon in his hand. And suddenly six men came from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with his battle axe in his hand. One man among them was clothed with linen and had a writer's inkhorn at his side. They went in and stood beside the bronze altar. Now the glory of the God of Israel had gone up from the cherub, where he had been, to the threshold of the temple. And he called to the men clothed with linen who had the writer's inkhorn at his side. And the Lord said to him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. To the others he said in my hearing, Go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eyes spare, nor have any pity. Utterly slay old and young, men, maidens, and little children and women. But do not come near anyone on whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. So they began with the elders who were before the temple. Then he said to them, Defile the temple and fill the courts with the slain. Go out. And they went out and killed in the city. So it was that while they were killing them, I was left alone, and I fell on my face and cried out and said, Ah, Lord God, will you destroy all the remnant of Israel in pouring out your fury on Jerusalem? Then he said to me, The iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great, and the land is full of bloodshed, and the city full of perversity, for they say the Lord has forsaken the land, and the Lord does not see. And as for me also, my eye will neither spare nor will I have pity, but I will recompense their deeds on their own head. Just then, the men clothed with linen, who had the inkhorn and at his side, reported back and said, I have done as you commanded me. Thank you.